Blog Talk Radio.
Well, and we are live here for End Zone, Falcon Zone, Super Pro Football Show. I am your host, Jeremy York, joined once again by the coach, Mr. Haywood Hill. How you doing this week?
I'm good, Jeremy. How about yourself?
Doing pretty good. Reggie is back this week. He will be joining us here shortly, I believe, right about for Falcon Zone. So much we got to get to and so much to really talk about. I know we've been talking about some of this beforehand. Richie Incognito has surfaced. Wes Welker takes another hit. We got Sam Bradford. We're going to mention Josh Shaw. But first, as we talked about last week, we went through all of our AFC teams and who we felt like could be playoff contenders and such. This week we're going to kind of go through the NFC real quick and tell you who we're seeing at this point. And, you know, in a couple weeks we'll go over this again and see if we're still in the same spot, you know, because it is so hard to predict the NFL sometimes. But, we'll start right at the NFC East. And in the NFC East, that is the Eagles, the Cowboys, the Redskins, and the Giants. How do you see this playing out?
Okay, Jimmy, right now I think that the Redskins, believe it or not, are going to be the team that I favor. I think with Coach Gruden going there from Cincinnati, he brings energy to that team as a young coach. I think the Giants fall in right behind there. And then, at that point, it's just kind of a toss-up if anybody makes wild card. But those are my two teams right now.
Yeah, to quote Colin Cowherd, right now, Dallas is probably the most entertaining dumpster fire in the league, and that's not a super knock or anything on them like that. It's just they've finally gotten to the point where they're going to have to get worse to figure out how to get better, and it could get really bad in Dallas here soon. But it's such a crapshoot of a division right now. I do like Washington right now. I think Gruden will turn them around a little bit. I feel like the Eagles are still going to make a little bit of a run this year as far as for this division, so I kind of got it between Philadelphia and Washington. But, you know, New York's still got enough playmakers around where any of those three teams technically could take this. But for the sake of this right now, I'm going to say Philadelphia and then Washington.
Okay, my only concern with Philly is that the system that their coach runs requires them to have a lot of speedy guys. Which means that you have to have, you know, linemen that are a little bit lighter because of the zone blocking. And I know they're still learning that system. They'll be better with it this year. But I think that's the concern. When you're talking about faster, bigger defensive linemen, and you're talking about the type of offense that he runs, which is kind of a spread with a lot of movement in it, I think that's the one thing now that's going to hurt them because they're on film. And now they have not only the offense from the collegiate standpoint when he was in college in Oregon doing that, but now they have a whole year under their belt with him in Philadelphia.
Right. Moving on to the NFC North, that would be the Detroit Lions, the Chicago Bears, the Green Bay Packers, and the Minnesota Vikings.
Okay, I like the Packers to start out. I think with him having Aaron Rodgers back healthy, although they do have a concern at center, I don't think it's a big concern. I think they've already got that covered. I also am looking at what you have in the Chicago. Adding Santonio Holmes gives them vertical threats quickly. So they're in a position in the hunt for the division. Detroit, I think the suit thing might have some effect with what they have going on. Plus, they have a new head coach there that they have to kind of get themselves acclimated to his philosophy and his system there. Minnesota, Minnesota's interesting this year. They've always had Peterson there to, you know, kind of toe the line for the team as the leader. I think Bridgewater, if given the opportunity, with the help of Peterson mentoring him, can be very good there. I think that they can also do a lot just because Bridgewater is athletic. He doesn't have to stay in the pocket. He can move around. He can extend plays with his feet. So it's going to be interesting. Keep your eye on Minnesota, but I have to go with Green Bay, Chicago, and then Minnesota.
Now, an interesting note about Minnesota, Matt Cassel, who has been named the starter there, called into the Dan Patrick Show earlier this week, and actually I didn't realize that he had the personality he did. He's actually quite funny, and he did a Belichick impression that was pretty funny. And then they asked him to do a Brady impression, to which he said, my voice doesn't go that high. And they said, what are you talking about? And he goes, well, when Tom gets aggravated or gets angry, his voice gets higher and higher as he's yelling at you. He goes, my voice doesn't go that high, which had everybody kind of laughing and everything. But he said, in the long run, you don't really want to make either of those two guys mad. That's typically how you end up out of New England.
That's quite interesting. I know a coach who will, for the respect of his coach, leave nameless, who has the same type of Brady syndrome, if you will, respectfully speaking.
Oh, yes. I have relatives and coworkers and the like that do the same thing. And I guess I'm known to do it, too, sometimes. If I get really aggravated, it does go up a little bit. But jumping into we'll leave the South for a second. We'll go to the NFC West. That would be the Rams, the 49ers, the Seahawks, and the Cardinals.
Okay, you cannot refute the fact that you have Seattle in there as the current champions.
Right.
I think that they are going to have an interesting season because every game that they play will be a playoff type of game environment. I think you have San Francisco still as a staple team. And look out for Arizona. Look out for Arizona. I think they have a lot on the defense, even though they lost Dockett. They still have a lot there. They have Abraham. They still have a lot of, you know, veteran leadership with young players. And just look out for Arizona. You know, just keep your finger on the pulse of Arizona. I think Seattle still by far is, you know, on top right now going into the season. San Francisco is really going to push them because there's a lot of pressure right now on Coach Harbaugh to get back to where they were and win it. And Arizona's on quietly creep in as they battle it out. And injuries really determine who wins that division.
Yeah, I think, Seattle is the champs and still is technically the best team until proven otherwise. And I actually, because of a lot of the injuries that's happened to San Francisco and just the way I've seen their first-team offense play so far, and I understand they haven't necessarily opened the playbook as they typically might at another time. But I feel like Arizona's going to emerge as the second team in this year and possibly take up the wild card spot and leave San Francisco on the outside looking in. But, Seattle and Arizona. The Bradford injury is really going to set the Rams back a little bit. But I mean, at the same time, I don't think they're quite ready offensively to compete. So, I got Seattle, Arizona here. And we'll move into the South real quick. That would, of course, be the New Orleans Saints, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the Carolina Panthers, and the same Atlanta Falcons we're going to talk about in the next segment.
Believe it or not, this is a three-way split. I think that Atlanta can start out fast and grab this division fast if they come out and they grab the first 4 weeks and come out at least 3-1. The reason why I say that is because they have some divisional games up, you know, off the rip in the first 4 weeks. New Orleans is always tough to beat, but watch out for Carolina. I've watched Carolina closely. I see a different type of energy in Cam Newton right now. The receiver that they drafted from Florida State, Benjamin, is really, really finding his way into that offense. They have a plethora of backs right now, so that's not a concern for them. They can hit you with a lot of different things at running back. be careful and do not overlook Carolina this year, because if you do, you'll get beat by them. Right now, the toss-up is between Atlanta and New Orleans. But Carolina, to me, as I spoke of when we were talking about the West, and speaking of that situation with Arizona and San Francisco and Seattle, it's that same type of situation. It depends on how many players they can keep healthy, and at what time of the year that they go and make that run with the win-loss record.
So who do you like to be the front runner in this division right now?
Right now, I would have to say I am going to lean with Atlanta. I'm giving them a 10-6, 11-5, and I think they right now are the team that is going to be the team to beat, believe it or not. I think they have a lot to prove.
Yeah, I think Lovie's going to do a good job in Tampa Bay, but they are definitely the distant fourth team. I would look out for him next year because he's going to have his team by then. But to me, the questions are, can New Orleans continue to build after, you know, with younger guys? They actually refresh, as most teams usually don't. You know, got rid of some of the veterans but replaced them with younger talent. If they can keep going at their thing, I got them favored right now just slightly over Atlanta. The question mark with Atlanta is always, can you keep everybody healthy? And the question mark in Carolina right now is, you just lost all those receivers, and, you know, Benjamin has been doing well. If they can show that they can win with these different receivers, then I think they would actually take over the 2 or 1 spot. But for now, I got New Orleans slightly over Atlanta just at this juncture, just because I've seen of the team's play.
Right, I think with Atlanta, the reason why I chose Atlanta over New Orleans right now is just based on what you just said. You know, New Orleans lost a lot of veteran players, key players. And Atlanta has rebuilt with some of those young guys playing last year. And so they know what they're capable of right now. They just went into the draft and picked up some pieces of their puzzle. Now, how Matt Ryan facilitates this offense this year, if he comes out like the Matt Ryan of, you know, the third year in the league, they're going to be hard to stop. They're really going to be hard to stop, and they're going to put a lot of pressure on defenses this year with some things that they haven't opened up in their playbook just as of yet. So that's the only reason why I say what I say right now. I think Atlanta right now, their young talent has had enough experience in playing on the field versus New Orleans' young talent right now. And that's the first game of the season is going to be that game that sets the tone for the NFC South.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I know we'll be down there for I know we've had some invites, and we're putting some things in concrete and in writing, but I know that us as a show, we're hoping to be down there for at least the tailgating and pregame festivities. Maybe we can catch that game as well. But moving on, we'll go through some of these quicker ones real quick before we get into the incognito situation once again. Broncos wide receiver Wes Welker received his third concussion in 10 months. As I mean, you can answer this as a coach, a fan. You can answer this as a personnel. I think no matter how you answered, I think we both have the same response for Mr. Welker right now.
Yes, it's unfortunate, but when you have that many concussions that close together in a year, in less than a year actually, it's going to be very, very hard to medically clear him. And if you go back and you look at what happened to Troy Aikman in Dallas, same type of scenario.
Right.
Too many concussions, too close together, forces the retirement. I think Wes Welker has been an excellent player. I think there's nothing else that he has to prove. He has Super Bowl rings to show his accomplishments.
Actually, I don't think he has one yet.
Did he not get one? Okay, then I stand corrected on that. I thought he was on one of those teams.
I'm not sure because I thought so too, but I heard somebody earlier this week say thought he didn't have one. He was just on the other side of the New England run.
Okay, and I was stand corrected that be the case. But he's played on a team with, you know, and been in a great system. He's made a nice income for himself and a life. And at this point, as a coach, I most definitely want to say that I would rather see him leave the game healthy than him risk it. I would rather see him leave the game healthy than he risk, you know, his life possibly.
Yeah, the
and
way
pushing
I
it that far.
The way I saw it was, I believe he has two young kids now. He may just have the one, but you kind of want to look at him and go, do you want to see the rest of their life from a wheelchair or from a couch, or do you want to be able to get down there and play with them or to run in the yard with them? Because that's, to me, what it's going to come down to. You don't want to push it too far and, you know, end up where you can't move the rest of your life because of getting dinged up so much.
Well, the NFL is not going to play around with this either with what they have right now with all of the concussions and that, you know, that settlement and that lawsuit still pending. I think they're going to be very, very critical in looking at that type of health issue, amongst all other issues, more especially anything that deals with head injuries. So it might not even be a choice that he has at the end of the day. I think most definitely the commissioner and the medical team and independent study outside of the team doctor, you know, Mr. Welker's own personal physician, and, you know, I think this thing is going to be looked at very, 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 very closely with a fine-tooth comb, with neurologists involved from all over, possibly the world, just to make sure that they are sure if he's capable and fit with that many concussions that close.
Right. Yeah. I think it could be a real bad situation, especially if he's not given, you know, if he's given. I don't know. I think, like you said, I don't know if I would want to be the doctor that would clear him for this. I don't think I'd want my name on that sheet. And we wish the best for Wes, and I know he was playing catch with Peyton earlier, but playing catch and playing wide receiver in the league during a game are completely different things.
Right, I agree. I don't see a doctor clearing it. And if he or she does clear him, it's not going to come without a lot of scrutiny possibly behind it. So I don't think it's just a doctor being cleared. I think it's going to be the NFL clearing him just because of what they have pending right now. I think this is not something that just one doctor can say yay or nay on. I think it's going to have to go through a panel of people, if you will, just to get that clear.
Yeah, I think so. And from one injury to another, the Rams quarterback Sam Bradford tore his ACL in his left knee. It happened to be the same ACL he tore last year. And I know you said before, that's very uncommon that you typically tear the same one.
Yeah, you normally don't see that, Jeremy. You normally don't have a tear to the ACL twice on the same leg. Normally what ends up happening is that once you get the one that's damaged repaired, the other one normally goes a little bit later, maybe within the, you know, 1 to 3 years. That's not scientifically proven, but normally that's what happens. You'll see that, and most of the time you hope to avoid that or some type of, you know, meniscus tear. But it's quite unique that he tore the same ACL. And again, you know, I know he went through some aggressive rehabilitation, as all players do at any level, to be able to get the range of motion back and the strength in the leg. But it's unfortunate that, you know, it happened, you know, at this particular point in time, and not even before the team, you know, before he could get into the season and get started, you know, trying to move the team in the direction they wanted to go.
Yeah, they won't tell you if they're trying to trade for anybody or anything like that. I mean, the short list apparently had Mark Sanchez on it at one point. I don't think so. I think if they're going to go after anybody, it's going to be Kirk Cousins out of off the Redskins or Ryan Mallett in New England. It would be somebody like that, but I also feel like they're probably just going to let Sean Hill start for a little while, and they're going to go get a backup somewhere.
That's a possibility. It's so close with the season right around the corner to bring somebody in that fast. If they can make the move for Cousins, it would benefit them. However, I don't think Gruden is going to let Cousins go. I mean, I think he has 1-2 punch there in Washington. So, again, they're just going to play out with what they have and get into the first 4 weeks of the season before they try to make any moves.
Yeah, I definitely think so. Quick news and note on Jets cornerback Dmitri Patterson. Apparently, he couldn't be found for a couple days. They said he went AWOL, or that's what everybody was saying. he's made a statement today that he didn't go AWOL. Don't really know what he was, but the team has suspended him indefinitely. As a coach, have you ever had this happen, or even as an agent, have you ever had somebody just up and disappear and you can't find them?
That happens. it's an interesting thing because it happens more frequent than people probably know. The problem with just leaving without anyone knowing where you are or your whereabouts puts strain on a team. If I wanted to talk to that player right now, I can't do that until that player makes himself available to me. But in this particular case, there's something interesting that I found out. My understanding is that his agent reached out to the Jets organization several hours prior to Friday's game to inform them that his client was not going to be in attendance.
Okay.
So the Jets never really said that they didn't know where, you know, didn't have any information on whether or not he was going to be there or not. It was more so they didn't know where he was physically. So I think he's met with the organization since then, along with his agent. They've gotten at least, you know, that part of it taken care of. Now, when the suspension gets lifted, you know, we won't know. Some want to lean to the side. He might have been disgruntled about his position on the depth chart. I don't know if that's true or not. We won't know if that's true or not. But we do know that the contact has been made between both parties, and they're sitting down at the table with it as we speak.
Yeah, definitely so. And that's for them to sort out, and I'm sure we'll hear about it just as soon as that breaks. I guess we'll get into Richie Incognito real quick, and there's not a whole lot to report except for, as reported earlier this week, he was reinstated to full playing status by the NFL. And within a couple hours, he was in Tampa Bay meeting with the Buccaneers, who need offensive guard help to a very bad extent, especially if they're talking to him at this juncture. It was a five-hour meeting, but it seems like right towards the end of the meeting, suddenly Logan Mankins was brought in via trade to play guard from New England. So I would imagine Richie's not going to be a Tampa Bay Buccaneer, at least right now.
It's going to be very tough for Mr. Incognito. When you go back and you look at what the NFL was able to find in an independent study with the bullying in Miami, one thing I found interesting in reading the report was basically I didn't see where there was a plan of action for Mr. Incognito as far as the bullying is concerned. What do I mean by this? Very simple. There was no anger management class put in place. No sensitivity whatsoever. I'm not taking this personal. I'm just speaking of what was in the report. And I noticed that all the other parties involved had some type of anger management attached to them or some type of sensitivity, or they kind of had to deal with this issue. Whereas
right.
Mr. Incognito kind of just was suspended. Now, the question is not whether or not he's a very good athlete. And he's been in the NFL, so he's a very good athlete. And his services are being seeked by and or courted by some teams. The question is if you did not do anything to force some type of arresting of the behavior, when will that emerge again, if it emerges again, and then how can you handle it? You saw what it did in Miami.
Right.
Okay, you saw what it did in Miami. So the question now is, what team is going to take the chance to pull the string on bringing him in, and how does that affect your team? Because it's not like it's not public knowledge now as to what took place in Miami. How does he come in and affect the locker room? That's the biggest question. And what
well,
team is going to be willing to take that chance?
Well, and I heard earlier this week Dan Patrick actually mentioned that when all this come out, that he's actually seen most of the text messages that come between Martin and Incognito in the whole thing. He goes, it's not as one-sided as you think it is. They both have a warped sense of humor, and they both hung out quite a bit up until all of a sudden, you know, the whole report come out. So, I mean, there's still more they can investigate into this, but I think they're going to pretty much move past this particular incident and hope it never happens again. which kind of leads us into the next thing. And the reason I think they're going to kind of, I'm not going to say put this under the rug, but they're going to kind of hope this goes away on its own, because Roger Goodell a few hours ago handed down the new domestic violence policy. And go ahead.
The interesting part about the new domestic violence policy, and I have not had a chance to read the policy as of yet, is that he, Mr. Goodell, got a few frowns when it came to the Ray Wright situation.
Right.
Okay? So now this forces the corporate side of the business to go back in and say, let us go and review, revamp, or reconfigure this policy. I think what drove the policy.
The three things that really stood out to me so far, and I haven't been able to dig real far into it, it wasn't that long ago it came out today. The first one does have to do with Ray Rice. Goodell has come out and made the statement that he made a mistake in the way he handled and punished Ray Rice, that he felt like it wasn't enough for what happened. Because when I read off the second thing, well, the second thing, it goes for all NFL personnel. So this is not just players. This is anybody who is encompassed as a member of an organization, which is kind of interesting, but at the same time, it needs to happen. The third thing, it's basically down to a two-offense thing. In the first offense, you're going to miss 6 games. I think that's why he felt like the Ray Rice thing shouldn't have been 2. I think he rushed it a little bit, and he realized his mistake. Your second offense is going to get you a lifetime ban from football.
Wow. Again, I have not had a chance to read the policy in its entirety to get to the meat and potatoes, as I would like to put it. The one thing I do find interesting now about that policy is that the first time it's 6 games, and the second time it's a lifetime ban.
Yes.
My question goes back to something we addressed in some previous shows. Now with that being out there, what type of ammunition does it provide for spouses, girlfriends, average individuals?
Right.
That's what I'm going to find. That's going to be the gray area with that, because even though you might be avoiding a situation, if this situation is captured on film, the appearance of something. So I hope that they also have a action plan in place, if you will, to really, really investigate it very thoroughly before handing down the consequence. Because we already know it's going to be a financial situation of, you know, stress applied to that, you know, missing that many games. But then now the second one can basically erase your career from the NFL.
Right.
The opportunity of becoming a Hall of Famer, Pro Bowl status, contracts, your livelihood. So it's going to be very interesting how that plays itself out. And I'm saying that now early from a director of player personnel standpoint, if you will, because that's going to play heavily in how they now look at drafting players as well. So this is all encompassing. Because you're not going to get but 2 opportunities, and again, you're going to have to pick and choose your places and your circle wisely.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And you know, in the coming week, we'll get a chance to dive into this a little more and sink the claws in and really break this down and read it, and we'll report more on it in the upcoming weeks and talk more on it, because That's what's being reported, and that's the few things I've heard. And I guess to get to our last story, it's about college, so I wasn't even going to mention it. To start with, I was going to tell you about how this great heroic effort from the USC cornerback, Josh Shaw, I think is his name, about how he jumped off a second-story balcony, received 2 high ankle sprains, and saved a 7-year-old nephew. But as I was telling you and Reggie the other day, there's been a new development in this. The new development is he's actually being investigated for a possible apartment robbery where he jumped off of a 3rd-story balcony, and that's how he got him. He was actually running from authorities. It's what he's being investigated for. Now, you're not guilty until proven that way, at least for right now. Everything we're hearing, I mean, they're still looking into it, but he fit the description, and his girlfriend, who lives in the same apartment complex, or in the same building, I believe, actually picked him out and said, yeah, he was here, or yeah, that matches his description. I mean, what do you think about all this?
I think it's a thin line between love and hate.
Yeah.
I think that fitting the description is generic, because that's probably one in five students on their campus. It's a particular apartment complex. A lot of the USC students live there, as to why I make that statement. The burglary thing, they went in to do the investigation and write the report, but he was never implicated in it. There was nothing stolen from the apartment. They interviewed a tenant who came down the hall, who spoke of, you know, a scream being heard. I think it's a thin line between love and hate. I think that obviously he and the girlfriend might have had a disagreement about something. She chose not to speak to him for a little while. He wanted to talk to her. I think he went by, knocked on the door. No one came to the door. I think he felt she was there, maybe because the car was in the parking lot. She might have been somewhere else in the complex at friends. And he was going to talk to her. I don't think he had any...
no ill will
intention
or anything.
Of trying, I don't think he had any intention of hurting her. But I think what happened, and again, this is just my opinion, I think he called himself going to her window. He was going to go up and talk to her. He entered the apartment. The roommate was there. He startled her to death. She screams. He panics, and he jumped out the window. I mean, I think that's what I think happened. Now, I will first say, first and foremost, I'm not a detective. I am not skilled in investigations. I'm just looking at what's being presented, and we're talking about young kids, love, college, and a football star. And it all kind of fits into that mold. Now, the truth will come out. The investigation, you know, will be handled. And I'll be interested to see how close I was to what I just said down the stretch.
Yeah, and the oddest thing in all this, and to me, I feel like it's a good call on his part, but it's also not making him look, you know, 100% clean in this whole thing, is that he did retain a lawyer when this news story broke. Suddenly he got a lawyer. Now, it could be because he's being investigated for possible criminal activity, but at the same time, when you immediately retain a lawyer as fast as it seemed to break, it's kind of saying, I wasn't exactly where I said I was, but I may not have been there either.
Well, intelligent people hire lawyers when it deals with legal matters. He's not trying to self-represent. And I think that's smart. You know, you don't hire the plumber to fix your roof.
That's true.
I think in that aspect, that's a smart move on his part because of the way that this can play itself out.
Yeah.
However, like I said, the truth is going to come out. And what I find interesting is it ties right back into what we were just speaking of with this new domestic violence policy. How is it going to be truly defined? Could this have been one of those cases? We won't know. Could this have been, let's just play it forward and say he was in the NFL. Is this that six-game suspension that we're speaking of? There was no violence that took place, but could it now be looming in the background that there was a potential environment that was set for that? Could this have been that second incident where he was trying to leave and forgot his car keys and couldn't get back in? Does it now lead to the lifetime ban? It's going to be real interesting to see how it all plays out.
Yeah, I think so. I think they will have to revamp that domestic violence policy. But we are all out of time here for End Zone. Join us here in a few short seconds as we dive into the Falcon Zone stuff, and we're hoped to be joined by Reggie as well. See you guys in a few minutes. Jeremy, the Impact York from End Zone here. Would you or your business like to advertise with End Zone? It's easier than you think. With many packages available, we've got the perfect deal to help you promote your business to a whole new audience. All you have to do is contact us at 3endzone@gmail.com for more info and to get started today. Let us help you grow your business. What an appropriate song. As thanks to the fun NFL schedule, we are actually watching the Falcons be on top of the Jaguars right now. And it's actually looking pretty good. It seems to be a good punters battle here lately, but we'll tell you more about that here in a minute. I am your host, Jeremy York, joined once again by the coach, Mr. Haywood Hill, and also back after sending him out of town to research a couple things, Mr. Reggie Walker. How we doing, guys?
Doing good, Jeremy. How you guys doing?
Doing great, Jeremy.
We are doing quite well. I decided to save the End of Zone trivia because I wanted to give you a fair shot at it, Reggie. We'll get to it here in a second. We will talk about the Falcons bringing Eric Weems back. We'll recap the game against the Titans. We'll preview / kind of half recap what's going on with this game against the Jaguars right now. We'll talk some Steven Jackson, some big questions in Hard Knocks. But without further ado, the In the Zone trivia for this week. Pretty much I just gave you guys the subject that it was Falcons kick returns, which I know is kind of vague, but if I said any more about it, I feel like you'd get it really quickly. If you guys are ready, here it is. What player has the franchise record for the longest kick return touchdown in the history of the team?
I got two in my head now.
Okay.
I've got Allen Rossum and I've got Eric Weems.
Okay. Which one do you think has it?
I'm going to go with Allen Rossum.
I agree.
You should have went with Weems. It's Weems.
Wow. Really?
Yep.
It's 100 and what?
It's the 102-yard return he had at Tampa Bay in 2010.
Okay. I knew it was 102, and I thought that it was Rossum that had it as well.
Yep. Honestly, when I first saw the question somewhere, I Rossum was the first one to come to mind, but when I researched it, turns out it was Eric Weems. So that leads us right into the return of Eric Weems to the Atlanta Falcons. What does this mean to the Falcons?
Well, from a fan's perspective, I didn't really see it until this last game, I'll tell you that.
Okay.
This last game showed me that Devin Hester is going to have much more to do with the offense than initially thought. So I think with that, that's where Eric Weems will come into play. I think he'll do more kickoffs or punt returns or whichever the case, or share some of the duties, and you'll see Devin Hester involved in the offense a little bit more.
All right,
well,
Coach,
me,
how do you see it?
Okay, thank you, Jeremy. I think what's going to happen here, I thought that he was always going to be an insurance policy. I said that when they went out to acquire him in free agency. I think you saw that in preseason games, especially with inside of the red zone, where you see them going with a lot of screen passes with him. I think with Weems coming back, we now know why he's back, because he holds a record with them. So
yeah.
Now you have the ability to have an insurance policy with Hester in the event that you do lose White or Jones. So now you have that insurance policy. You, if you, any one of those two guys go down, you can still have that vertical threat, and you have someone to take the responsibilities of the special teams offense so that you can immediately move them into the offense.
Yeah, I kind of see this as not only does it take pressure off of Hester, my dad brought up actually that what if you put, as we see, Jackson DeVille swinging across a rope, which is nothing new in Jacksonville. That guy's really cool. But back to the Weems thing, what if you put Hester and Weems on the same, you know, to return a kickoff? I mean, the other team's going to kick it out of bounds. But to me, they brought Weems back so that he can return a majority of the kicks. And Devin Hester is at least in the preseason, to me, been the top wide receiver out of this bunch. Now, I understand your two starters aren't going to play as much, one's coming off an injury, and you really don't want to wear them out in the preseason, but Hester's kind of emerged as the wide receiver three, maybe four.
Yeah, that's what I saw definitely in this last game is, and no offense to Mr. Douglas, but Hester was doing some of the things that we were wanting and are waiting to see out of Harry Douglas from the slot. So he definitely gives Matt Ryan that weapon that replaces maybe Gonzalez's production that's now gone. But he was very exciting coming out of that slot position. I got to say that.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think him playing slot, he's pushing Douglas for the position. He's, by nature, he's not a receiver, but he has made a name for himself with that situation. So I think that, again, you know, he's there as insurance. And if they decide to go with a full receiver set at the given time, he's a natural threat right now vertically against anybody.
Yeah, it would be very hard to track him down. Plus, you know, Weems is not just a return guy. Just like Hester, he can actually play wide receiver a little bit too. So, you know, to me, they made their team stronger. Now, I don't know why Eric Weems was cut by the Bears, I believe, a couple weeks ago, but it seems like Atlanta's going to benefit from a great return guy from the Bears two different times now.
Yeah, also, if you add this, if you don't mind me adding this, guys,
sure.
Take this into consideration too from a coach's strategy standpoint. If you put Weems on the kickoffs, because, you know, again, he's an element that's being added back, and you take Hester and put him on punts where you can't really just kick him out of bounds, you're now changing the game when it comes to your field position. And that's another thing that you have to take into consideration. Because, you know, people don't want to kick to Hester, so they'll just kick it out. But with Weems back there now, they'll try to kick more possibly to him. And if you put Hester on the punt returns, you can't kick it out of bounds or away really from him. So now you can change all of your field position offensively just with having those dual threats. It is something to think about.
Yeah, it is. I don't know if you guys got a chance to watch any of the Falcons-Titans game last week. To me, that seems like the Falcons team that I believe they're going to be this year. I believe they played, you know, they played really tough. Most of the people that kind of made some mistakes towards the end of the game for them are no longer with the team, so that was kind of their last tryout, I think. But overall, to me, that Falcons team is the one that needs to show up September 7th against the Saints.
Yeah, that first team offense definitely looked very sharp. Matt Ryan looked very sharp. Throwing the ball basically all over the field, getting Julio involved, so forth and so on. That was obviously the Devin Hester play was explosive. I'm still not convinced about the pass rushing yet, although one thing I can say is that Nolan mixed up his blitz schemes a little bit more. Warlow was able to get in there and do some damage, and Prince Shimbo was able to kind of wreak a little havoc. And also Rashid Hageman was able to wreak a little havoc as well. But defensively, you know, I got to see another level. I haven't been able to check out tonight's game so far, so I don't know if anything's changed. But I think you're right, Jeremy. I think that explosive, fast start Falcons offense or Falcons team, punching them in the mouth early, I think that's definitely what's going to be needed on September 7th with the new owner Ainge coming into town.
And before you weigh in there, Coach, I'll just update everybody. Right now it's 21-7, Falcons leading this one at halftime.
Okay, with that, and I'm not surprised what the Falcons are doing now. I think, Reginald, defensively, don't worry about them. Being a defensive coordinator, I'll tell you, don't worry about them. What they're doing right now is just looking at packages in the vanilla state, as we like to call it.
Okay.
They're running a lot of stuff generic right now. They're not going to tilt their hand any way that they feel that New Orleans can see something that they want to do. I am concerned, though, with one thing, and it's going to be interesting to see how it plays itself out, is the second-team defense. I noticed that a lot of guys got cut, but they were running, in defense of some of those guys, they were running a lot of zone. They ran a tremendous amount of zone with that second group just to see how guys athletically responded to teams. I think the second group is going to be not as good as the first group, but it's going to be close. And once he unleashes these blitz packages that he had, remember I told you at the beginning of the season, this team is going to look like the Baltimore Ravens when Ray Lewis first came in as a rookie. They're going to be that type of team. They're going to be a swarming. I mean, they're going to be all over the place, guys. Trust me when I tell you, I can see what he's doing with that defense, and I can see how he's holding them back, and he wants to just see certain things and see where certain people are at the snap of the ball in just the infrastructure of it all. But once he releases the package, watch. The Falcons are going to – that defense will be just as fast as that offense. Trust me. That's why I pull them there at 11-5 right now. That's why I'm predicting that now, that 11-5. But they got some things coming that people are just not prepared for out of the traditional Falcons.
Right. Right. Okay. I'll accept that.
Yeah, and we can kind of talk a little bit of Hard Knocks kind of paralleling off of this, just especially because of the emergence we're seeing of Prince Shembo is most of the time now playing with the ones and not the twos or the threes. It's kind of interesting that they're letting him kind of lead the charge, and he's just taken onto it like he's done it his whole life. And the fact that Brian Cox has finally found a way to light a fire under Rashid Hageman, and he finally got in his head, and he finally just point blank looked at him in the face and said, "If you'd ever put it together, there ain't nobody in this league that can deal with your power."
Right. Right. Yeah, that was very interesting segment to watch. And he was. It's frustrating to see sometimes a player with such an ability just kind of throw it away because of youth and inexperience. But I am thrilled that it appears that Coach Cox has been able to get through to him. I know that Coach Cox mentioned that he was handpicked by him based on what he saw in the Senior Bowl. So I guess that's where that allegiance definitely has to lie. So we ought to need him. I mean, he looks good. I just hope he can keep it up and stay away from this Atlanta nightlife and just stay focused.
I agree. I think the Atlanta nightlife for any young player, or players that even transition into Atlanta, because Atlanta is just the new Hollywood now, can most definitely be detrimental to a team. That is the one thing that is a blessing and a curse with this particular organization. You're not going to have problems finding players that want to come to Atlanta. That's not going to ever be a problem for Atlanta, whether it's acquiring free agents or looking at guys that they're going to draft or just talking to players down the stretch. The one thing that they do have to combat, though, is the nightlife here. You have a lot of activity in Atlanta and a lot of things to do. So now the question is, how do they adjust? Can they stay focused? Will they be healthy and make sure they don't get in any trouble? I think those are some of the keys.
Yeah. I mean, years and years ago, way before there was as many distractions in Atlanta as there are right now, that Favre kid had a trouble around here. But some of the other things in part. Some of the other things I saw in Hard Knocks that I wanted to say, it was interesting to see the power outage at Flowery Branch and for Matt Ryan to go, "That's never happened when I've been here." It just kind of shows these fun little summer storms can even wreak havoc on the best facilities. It's been really nice to see Roddy White's personality come out. I mean, he's always joking around, always messing around, but in the same way, he's kind of mentoring a lot of these guys, and he's having fun. he even made the statement to Steven Jackson that his first couple years in the league, it was all about having fun to him. He didn't really care much about the game or practicing hard or nothing like that. But now that he's to that stage, he used to look at those veterans like, man, y'all don't even know what you're talking about. But now that he's that veteran, he looks at these young guys like, hey, don't be dumb like me. Pay attention now.
Yeah, I thought that was a very interesting part, Jeremy, as well, because I think back during that time, that's when we had MB7 here as the quarterback, and he was dropping all those passes that year. So that would make sense, and that would go right in line along with what he said. The other thing that I have been very pleased to see, and I know that there has been some mention made of it in some private articles here and there, has been the reemergence, and I'll say reemergence based on the prediction that Coach Hill actually made before all of this, before this year started. But the reemergence of Matt Ryan as far as his vocal state and what he's saying and what he's demanding from all areas of the team, I think has been phenomenal.
Yeah, I've actually liked Matt Ryan's personality on this. Before, I thought he was just the quiet guy and kind of guy in the back, you know, almost a Chipper Jones for all the Atlanta fans out there. Kind of the quiet guy, you don't really know much about him. But then as we've seen his personality develop, like this week doing the Sports Illustrated photo shoot, he looked just so nervous during all this stuff that it was kind of fun to see that he actually, honestly, him and Roddy probably get along really greatly because they both like to really have fun.
Right. But he definitely, I mean, even little things that he's saying, hey, guys, if this small amount of points is all we're expecting to score, and we're not going to cut it. I mean, those types of statements coming into the wide receivers meetings, getting them in on the receivers going, hey, man, cut here, do this, let me know, don't change, don't this. Those are the types of things I was hoping that, you know, that Coach Hill's prediction was going to be correct, man. It seems like we're headed down that path.
Well, Coach, I'll kind of throw it to you here. Not trying to cut you off, but I'll kind of throw it to you here, Coach.
Sure.
Seeing as how you've been through a lot of these training camps and in all kinds of different scenarios and places, are the Falcons pretty much on par with the way Goodwin's work out? Or, you know, I guess what kind of crazier things could be happening right now in camp?
Well, you could have a plethora of injuries right now. You can still be trying to see how you're going to separate your ones from the twos. You can still be dealing with contract issues. It's a lot of things you can deal with. Right now, the Falcons are homing in. Heavy is the head that wears the crown. And what I mean by that is I'm placing that crown on Matt Ryan. When you gave him a huge contract like that, he has to do. Whereas prior to that, he wasn't necessarily required to do that. He now has to. They removed anybody else on that football team that could possibly be a distraction in splitting the locker room. So now that's not an issue for him. He is that guy. You don't have Abraham anymore. You don't have Gonzalez anymore. We have been trying to turn the reins over to him for the last 2 years. He is forced now to be a $100 million man. And so now he has to speak up. He has no choice but to speak up. And I think that what he's doing right now with this team is proving that he is ready for that role. I don't think prior to that he was ready for the role. I think now he's ready for the role. And expect for him to come out, and you're going to see a lot of emotion out of him. You're going to see him doing things he hasn't done in a while. I think he's going to spend a lot of plays even with his feet. You're going to see him go to the sideline and talk to receivers and talk with coaches and talk to the defense and high-five people. Look for that type of energy out of Matt Ryan. That's why I'm giving him 11-5. Look for them to be even close to the conference championship game. You know, as long as they can stay healthy with what they have, I mean, Matt Ryan's going to really light up the NFC South this year.
I know Reggie's glad to hear that.
Wow, I was just over here amazed. Wow, thank you, Coach Hill.
Well, you're welcome. I mean, I think he's going to be hard to deal with this year. I think he is going to be a competitor. I mean, he's always been a competitor, but I think now he's ready to really compete. And that's what you look for in leadership. And that's why he's doing it. I mean, he's had to sit down with himself. We always tell players all the time, go look yourself in the mirror. Because what you do with yourself when you buy yourself is what's going to answer all of those questions. And I think he's done that now. I think he's taken his offseason. He looked how poor they played last year. He looked at all of the things that he could have done or did not do to possibly have even helped the team just a little bit more. last year with his ability, and he did not do it. And now this year, you know, Kareem rises to the top. So watch him on the sideline. He's going to be swinging towers over his head. He's going to turn to the crowd. Let, you know, rise up. I mean, watch what he has playing. And it also helps to have Hard Knocks in there so that he can get the practice. So watch for Atlanta Falcons. I'm telling you, I mean, I watch teams, all of the teams all year, and I'm telling you, Atlanta is one of them teams this year that they are going to, you're going to earn your wins with Atlanta. And they're most definitely going to let you know they're in town when they play you, whether they're at home or on the road.
You got that, Jeremy?
Yeah, I got that. But what I was going to say is no, I for the most part, yeah, I'm here. Technical glitch here. I think we're having one of those freak storms again, but we'll be all right. For the most part, the team this year is the team that they wanted to have last year, and they have the depth in case something happens. There's a lot of people emerging. Some of the young guys are already making their presence felt and everything. And, you know, even the only reason right now, to me, the Falcons are the stronger team because their defense is better than the Saints' defense. And their offense is about neck and neck. They're pretty much on par. The only reason that I have the Saints with a small nod right now is, at least this early in the season, we haven't seen them open the playbooks. We've seen them play very vanilla, as you guys like to say. And we've also, it's to me, you are the champ until proven otherwise. And so far, we haven't seen New Orleans play any games. We haven't seen the Falcons play any actual games that count to know. You know, when we assess this in a couple weeks, could this change? Yeah, I kind of hope it does. But, I mean, for right now, if you're an Atlanta fan, you got to be super excited. This team really does have the wheels to go a long way. I think we've made Red speechless.
No,
I'm loving all the praise. I'm loving it. I tell you, the one thing that I am – very excited about, I mean, amongst more than anything, is it feels like the handcuffs have been taken off of all the coaches. And I remember Coach Hill made that point last year that, you know, how the head coach has the ability to override some of the calls, and sometimes you have to let your assistants, you know, kind of take over and do what they do. It feels like there's a lot more of that going on. The other thing I like is overall is the speed of the players. They seem to really hone in on a lot of players that have a lot of speed at all the different positions. So it's going to be fun, man. So I can't wait for September 7th.
Well, speaking of speed, our next thing we were going to talk about, since the Jaguar game's going on now, so either our listeners are watching it and not listening to us, or they're watching it while they listen to us. So it's, we'll kind of preview a little bit of the stuff there. There's probably some cool matchups. But Steven Jackson actually returned to practice this week. And as me and Coach were speaking earlier today on, I think he pretty much had to. He's playing for his job right now.
Yeah, between Devontae Freeman as well as the reemergence again of Antoine Smith and Jaquizz Rodgers actually has not looked that bad as well. He's been able to kind of hold it down for him. So, yeah, I agree. I think at some point you start looking at that contract and start looking at, you know, what the production level is and has been, and yeah, I agree. He came back because he had to.
Most definitely. As, you know, as I said before, I'm still thinking that Smith is a featured back. He is a guy that most definitely can play. He most definitely can carry a 30-40 carry game with Freeman. Jackson doesn't have a choice. He does not have a choice in this, and I think he basically might have, you know, I'm questioning the soft tissue injury. I'm not saying he wasn't hurt, but guys, this is football, and you're going to play through even some of those injuries. Now, again, preseason is a way of being, you know, precautious with a player, but he's going to be really gassed when he comes back, and I don't know if he's going to have enough in his tank against New Orleans, to be quite honest with you. He'll have the fresh legs. He'll have the less beat up body. Let's just be honest about that. But when it comes down to playing at that speed and being able to move that football, I think what really, really made him raise his eyebrows when he saw Smith jump in with the one. And at that point, he knew that he was playing for his job.
Yep, and as we go into other people playing for their jobs, the main questions, at least as far as everything I've seen, is the battle for the backup quarterback, in that T.J. Yates is probably the more seasoned. I mean, he has more experience, but at the same time, Renfrey, as soon as he catches onto the playbook, could easily snatch this right from T.J. Yates. How do you guys see this?
Oh, absolutely. But then give T.J. Yates I give T.J. Yates a little bit of slack in that he just recently came over with the trade with, you know, Akeem Dent, so he hasn't had as much time. Even tonight, somebody, Mitch, must have whispered that in his ear that he was on the verge or on the bubble or what have you, and I know that was kind of mentioned in some other areas because he's absolutely lit everything up during his play time here tonight against the Jaguars. But I agree with you, Jeremy. Renfrey has really looked good, and I wouldn't have an issue if Renfrey actually won the number two job personally, not based on his play. He seems to have good command of the huddle. He has good command of the playbook for what he's been given, and he makes good decisions. I don't think he's thrown any picks or what have you, and that's what you need in that backup guy.
The thing I find interesting, guys, is that for the first time in a long time, Atlanta has challenged that position. Now, make no mistakes about it, Matt Ryan is going to be the starter. Matt Ryan is going to play. But what is being placed on the back of Mr. Ryan's mind is my backup, and I have two guys in here that can play. So, you know, if he doesn't stay healthy, and unfortunately he does play all 16 games, he knows in the back of his mind that Yates can start. He knows that Renfrey is emerging, and that also pushes him. So that's a good sign that Atlanta is moving in the right direction of pushing at all positions. No position is safe, believe it or not, guys. Even though he has a huge contract, he's going to have to live up to it this year. He's making those moves and those strides now. But what Atlanta is saying overall, internally, in their infrastructure is you're going to have to play with your helmet. And we're not going to play with that. So every position this year is going to be carefully critiqued, and every player that backs up in that position is going to be really only probably about a snap or two off of what they want as a starter. So everybody's going to be pushed this year. That's why I said Atlanta's going to be so good. They're going to be good not only because they got young, faster, bigger, better, and they're going to, you know, basically take the handcuffs off of the coaching staff and allow them to do what they do, but because they have personnel there now that can literally and legitimately test at every position.
Well, and I'll put this out here real quick. We'll do a quick one-word answer. When Matt Ryan's time is done as the starting quarterback in Atlanta, whether that be temporarily or permanently, whatever can or may happen, how do you guys feel about Renfrey being your starter going forward?
Based on what I think, Coach?
Yeah, he's capable. I mean, right now it's a battle. You know, Yates really is for the first time he's battling for a backup position. He's actually battling for that spot. I don't think he came into Atlanta thinking that he wasn't going to be the backup. But after, you know, the last couple of preseason games and watching Renfrey emerge, he realizes now he's in a battle. And if it comes down to it, this next preseason game is going to really tell it. It's going to determine whether or not he's even still in Atlanta, which could be shocking to him. Because they have a lot of more upside with Renfrey right now than they do with Yates. So, again, if Matt Ryan was out, if Matt Ryan even got hurt and Yates for some reason just wasn't getting it, I don't think they lose anything with playing Renfrey now. I just don't see where they lose anything.
Well, and this brings up the last real question I had before we talk a little bit of Falcon Jaguars. I guess the easiest way to just come out and say it is, does Croy Bierman make the 53-man roster?
It's funny you brought that up because I've been really trying to cut Croy a lot of slack. I tell you, based on what we've seen out of him so far, I don't think so. It would not surprise me to see him cut. He looks very timid.
I don't see him making his team. I don't see him making his team. I think with the Achilles, he's been out for that whole year. He's played football long enough to know what he has to do. And so once they cleared him, some of it is a psychological thing. But he's not made a lot of plays. He's not been a factor. And being a veteran, you must come back and be a factor. There shouldn't be any question in a coaching staff mind that when you hit the field, they expect productivity out of you. They expect you to knock off a little of the rust. And the same, that's why I say the same thing about Jackson, just paralleling both of those situations. You are a veteran player. They expect you to do veteran things. And when you hit the field, it's not about you learning the playbook at that point because you've had enough time to do that, and you played and started enough games to get to the speed. What they're looking for at that point is how close are you off from where you used to be, and how close is that rookie or that second-year guy closing the gap on you. Right now, they're trying to work with Bierman and moving him around. They're trying to save a spot from him. But when it comes down to that 53-man roster right now with the guys that they brought in and the line and the scheme that they're running, if he can't play standing straight up and be productive and cover some, I think he's out.
Yeah, I'm right there with you guys on that one. It's nothing personal to Croy. I'm sure he's a great guy. I'd love to meet him. But I just think, I mean, you got to almost think, did all the press that he got last year between all the reality shows and everything like that, did it kind of hamper his rehabilitation? And is the timidness he plays with right now based off that injury actually holding him back? Because like you guys said, he's supposed to be the veteran leader of the edge rushers, and instead he's barely middle of the pack.
Right. Agreed. Yeah, it's interesting to see, and he said on one of the earlier Hard Knocks shows, you know, that he felt like it was him being timid with the injury or the rehab. But like Coach Hill said, I mean, now's not the time to do that. I mean, when they start looking at the cost versus the value, I think he's going to lose that fight if he doesn't step it up here soon.
I think the reality show actually was a distraction for him. I think somewhere in the course of the reality show, the rehabilitation, and having a set of twins, football, I'm not going to say football wasn't important to him because he's a professional. I'm sure football was important to him, but I don't think football was a priority at that moment when it came to what was on his lifeline. And I think now trying to get back into that, with that type of pressure on you now, and also trying to split time between the reality show and what's real in your life called your profession, is where somewhere in the vast scheme of things, something got lost or something got missing. So right now, I think on the back of his mind, he has to be thinking something different as well, because you have not seen that play out of Bierman as you've seen in the past.
Well, and the thing that really brought this up to me this week is a couple days ago, the New England Patriots, when they did their cuts for last week, released defensive lineman Tommy Kelly and also Will Smith. And I said, they could be on Atlanta radar. And, you know, if they're just effective enough and not playing timid, I could easily see Bierman getting cut and one of these guys getting added. But, you know, we'll just have to wait and see, because as of, let's see, the Falcons usually don't like to wait, so I would expect their cuts tomorrow afternoon sometime. But every NFL team has to go from 75 players to 53 players, and for everybody who doesn't want to do the math, that's 22 people are going to get cut per team between now and Saturday at 4. And then on Sunday, you can sign up to 10 people to a practice squad. But I don't even see Bierman as a practice squad guy. I see somebody like Tyler Starr maybe being a practice squad guy because he hasn't quite been a big enough impact. But, you know, we're just going to have to wait and see how they see things.
Right.
Well, also, I'd like to answer that, guys, just from the background that I have as an agent as well. I don't think Bierman can become a practice player because he's already been veteran status, and he has so many years under his belt now. I don't think he can go to the practice roster. You know, that's the one thing that you could believe that the Falcons might make a move on him just because they've been so aggressive with some of the young talent that they brought in and where they want to move forward. I don't think they see Bierman in a two-year or three-year playing with them. So he can't make the practice roster just because of how many years he's already played in the league.
I didn't even think about that, but that makes a lot of sense. But since you guys aren't really watching the game or not at a spot where you can, going into this Falcons-Jaguars matchup, what are you guys looking to see? The starters, Blake Bortles is going to start for the Jaguars. The Falcons are going to start T.J. Yates.
I'm more actually interested, to see how much T.J. Yates, how much better he's gotten this week. I do know that I've heard quietly there's kind of been some prodding, some counter prodding of him to kind of get it in gear. But I'm actually really more excited or interested in seeing whether Rashid Hageman continued with his assault as he did from last week, as well as seeing him watching him print Shimbo. I really do like that kid. I like what I've seen out of him. So I'm actually looking more I'm more interested in seeing what's on the defensive side than the offensive side. I think offensively, I think we're fine.
Believe it or not, I know this is Falcon zone, but the thing I'm interested in seeing is how well Borders is playing and how well the Jaguars offense is adjusting to him. What I am noticing is that they're quietly as a team petitioning for him to become their starter. And I see that in the play with their team, with receivers and the line and how they're blocking. And, again, I have not seen any of this game, but I'm interested to see how well he plays as he moves closer and closer to the season and where they're going to go in the first 4 weeks and after that if he's going to start or not for Jacksonville.
Yeah, and, I appreciate the easy segue there that I can make the announcement that one of the other Impact Media shows, Jaguar Zone, returns next Monday. And look for that, Jaguar fans. And since you guys aren't watching this game, there was a little incident that just happened, and I won't tell you who's involved or anything like that, but know it's not really a guy from either team that you would expect to be in a small little incident here, but it's very entertaining when you see what happened. It's right on the other side of the third quarter, I believe.
Wow.
The referees are trying to sort it out right now, but it's interesting. I'm trying to see how much time's left. I think there's 4 minutes left in the third. It's hard to see where I'm at, but they're trying to sort it out. But I do believe it's going to be double personal fouls. But it's pretty. I mean, I couldn't. If I pick names out of a hat from each side, I don't think you'd have either of these two guys involved.
Wow. Now you got me interested.
Yeah, it's. I'm sure it'll be on YouTube in about a minute. But it's. But you guys got anything else to add this week?
No, sir. I'm good. I'm glad. I'm just waiting on September 7th, man.
I think we all
are. I don't have anything to add.
I think we all are. And like I mentioned in End Zone, we're still putting some things in writing and some things in concrete. We're hoping to, at least as a show, to be down for some of the pregame festivities and some tailgating and some opportunities and such. We'll probably stick around, hang out for the game as well. As soon as we know more, we'll be telling all you guys about it. But for Mr. Reggie Walker and the coach Haywood Hill, I'm Jeremy York. Thanks for tuning in this week.